This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Well, today we have with us Candace Kadic, and she is a really special person in my life. I met her years ago, and she became a student of mine, and I've watched her over the years, and she's inspired me to get more connected with the self inside of me that relates to nature and to spirit, and also to a place where we can see the patterning of what is happening in the world and choose to do something about it. And this has been a wonderful inspiration for me. And Candace, I am so happy that you are able to join us today on the show. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure and will be the pleasure of the listeners, I'm sure. As usual, I would really love to have you start with your Reiki story. Like, how did you meet Reiki, and what was it like in the beginning for you? Those kinds of things.
I met my first Reiki master, who taught me Reiki 1 and 2, and she was a Red Hill, Surrey master. I just met her one day, and she said, "I'm doing a class tomorrow." And I thought, "Oh, I really want to be on that class. I really want to do hands-on healing." And I had two tiny children. I had to arrange all kinds of complicated babysitting, so I just did. And it all worked out great, which was part of the miracle part almost. But as I did this class with her, it was enlightening and opening, but it was as I went on to do my self-treatment, day after day of self-treatment, that I realized that I was quite a shy person, and that it wasn't really very much fun being that shy, and I could just slowly watch it drop off and fade away, not too much on any one day, but it just sort of dropped away. So a part of myself that I like the least almost. And as time went by, I liked myself more. That was important. And I stayed with her, and then after a while, maybe another year, I did the second degree, which was cathartic.
Oh, that sounds like an interesting story. What do you mean cathartic, or can you share it?
No, I remember that it was it's not a wild weekend, but for me it was like, I don't know, there was a lot going on. There was, you know, the initiations, there was throwing up in the bathroom, there was all kinds of things happening, but I did feel better afterwards.
Good.
And then just off into doing my self-treatment every day and sharing with people when I could, but for me, I just did my self-treatment every day after day. That's been my main practice.
Uh-huh.
More than lots of sharing groups or lots of meeting up with people.
Uh-huh.
And then because I did second degree, I was able to send second degree to my children from an early age, which was nice for me.
Well, since you lived with your children, I'm wondering, what was that about? What do you think the results were of all those treatments?
Well, part of it was going to school conferences and the teachers going, "I don't know what it is about your children, but they're really different." And I thought, nah, it's the Reiki, but you don't realize that because you don't know what I'm talking about. But they were good kids. And as time came through, so I have one who's like a trainee opera singer and one who's just graduating today from drama college in London, and they're very creative children. And I feel that their creativity that is native to children just wasn't allowed to block up and silt up and get stamped on. They did their own Reiki, they were 12 and 14, with Kristen Bonney. And they were off. They were doing their self-treatments every night. So that was good, and they would come in later, older teens, going, "Oh, I've done my Reiki yet," and sit up another hour and do some Reiki.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Well, I was quite pleased with that because I thought they're taking it serious, But also, going back to something my first Reiki master, who's Jan Smith, said, if she wakes up in the morning and she didn't do a Reiki yesterday, she felt that was a lost opportunity. And that's how I felt about my self-treatment.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I'm just wondering, you know, there are all these people in the world who go self-treatment, like, well, nothing's happening, or, you know, what am I supposed to be expecting? And it just seems like you were inspired somehow to do your self-treatments and have this feeling inside of you that something was missing. Do you have any idea how you got that inspiration, or did it just connect with something inside of you that you missed, and because you found it, you didn't want to let it go? Or I mean, I'm just wondering about the feelings about that.
What is it about self-treatment that feels so good and feels like you don't want to miss it? It's almost hard to put my finger on it now that you're asking me that direct question, but I know that it's more than just feeling like I'm worth it. I am worth this hour of treating myself. This is the best thing I can do for myself. And I really do believe that, and I've experienced it, but maybe I was lucky to see these parts of myself drop away that I didn't love. But as years have gone by, I feel the change is almost daily. I can see that my change is almost daily, the self-treatment, and I wouldn't stop for anything.
That's wonderful. And you don't think it's the hand positions or anything, it's just basically putting your hands on yourself.
It is nice to put your hands on yourself. I just put my hands on myself and get on with it. And sometimes I do it watching TV. Yes, I can do that. I know my kids will do that. But I feel that the relaxation, I don't think TV is strong enough to stop Reiki. So if I'm going to do that, well, that's all right with me. And then, but you don't get the mental piece that way.
Right, exactly.
But you get a treatment. So there are different ways of self-treating that. There's different things to gain from it. And if I really want to sit down and quietly self-treat, that's a nice thing to do. And also, I learned a long time ago from you, actually, that if I'm going to do second-degree self-treatment, I can put in a problem. And that has helped me a lot. If I want to send Reiki to my own, I often do to releasing and healing obstacles I've put in my own way. Moving into a certain, maybe moving forward or relaxing or, what was one yesterday, but I can approach things in quite a tense manner. So I'd like to release and heal that. And for me, it works well if I am doing a second degree treatment and putting that in. But I don't need to see what's going on. I don't need to see how it's going to happen. I'm doing the best I can because I'm sending it to myself with Reiki. And some of the issues that I've used for myself in the past have cleared up really quickly compared to how long I held on to them.
That's good. Wow, that's really encouraging.
And then you think, well, I'm a bit sick not to think about doing Reiki to this earlier, but I didn't.
Yeah. Well, maybe you've got to, when you think about doing Reiki, when you think about sending Reiki to something, then perhaps it's a moment of letting go somehow. I don't know. Who knows how it works?
I know, but I do think that you have to reach that point where it's actually come up to the top of your mind and you're ready to let go. And then the Reiki seems to bring stuff into your life, maybe not quite, not like miraculously, but you start to change your view on the things that are coming into your life.
Right.
And then you're able to let go.
Great. So I know that when I met you, one of the things that was really outstanding, I would say, in my impression of you was your sort of, I guess shyness is a word, but I just felt like you were like a deer in a forest or something, that you had a lot of sensitivity and you were connecting with these spirits that were alive in your garden and in the forest and so on. And it isn't that I don't believe in them. It's just that I feel like I'm kind of a bit like a crasher. I crash around through the forest, and the spirits probably dive under leaves and hide until I go past. But it would be wonderful to be sensitive to them. And I'm just wondering, did that come naturally, or did that come with Reiki, or did that come?
For me, I think it came with Reiki, because when you're practicing opening up all the time, to send Reiki through, you have to stop being closed down and open up to have some Reiki come through. And then you are practicing that openness. So, and I do think that the spirits probably don't dive undercover when you come by, but they ignore us because we ignore them. And I have to actually, I did it today. I was standing out in my garden. I thought, who's here? And I look around. And only then could I see that there's a lot of movement. Well, if you look at a cat's watching all the time. But they have a different setup. You know, they're just not like us. They're always watching what's happening, and we are only watching when we decide we're going to look.
Oh, yes.
So, this is a veil that, we have a lot of veils, and one of them is this, that we don't see very clearly what's happening around us. But it's nice. It's nice to see what they're doing. And if you ever stop and go, hi, I can see you, they're like, oh, they're right up. They're not disinterested, but we ignore them so thoroughly. They have, you know, they just get on with it.
So can you talk a bit more about your relationship with the nature spirits? And
The ones that are really fun, I mean, there's so many. We think we know what they are. There are just so many. And they're attached to the planet. And I think every planet has its own little crew. So ours are attached to the planet. We don't see them. They're as busy as they can be. They have jobs that we couldn't even imagine doing. So I thought, well, I'm done with Bluebell Woods near me. Last spring, I thought, I'm just going to see who's here and what they're doing. And I could see little ones up in the trees pulling all the leaves out. Every time a leaf opened, they would just pat it out smooth. And I thought, well, I thought leaves did that by themselves. But, you know, somebody was smoothing each leaf out as it came out. And others were collecting all the blue from the bluebells, taking it away. So more bluebells would grow in the blue. They were just spreading it a bit. There was lots happening, but I didn't know their names. But then I made the mistake of going, hi, I can write about you. And then I got mobbed. They're like, oh, I got a story. Oh, wait a minute. No. And then later when I came home, it was just one guy that looked like a green man actually came up and said, I've got all of their story. It'll just be me talking to you. You won't get mobbed. And then he told me a lot of stories and that was nice. And there are green men, local green men all around the UK. And yeah, they're around. They're sort of the part of it happened.
And are green men only in the UK?
I would doubt it, but they could look less green. I mean, it's a pretty green place, the UK and Ireland.
Yeah, that's true. I live in the desert, and we do have green here, but it's a different green.
Yeah, and I haven't looked around, you know, but if you looked around and saw somebody that was sandy colored, I wouldn't be surprised. And sometimes you just see the movement first, and then you think, what did I see? And then you look more closely. I mean, I thought I saw a parade going across my lawn a couple of weeks ago. It was like, there's lots happening. And it's very busy and very crowded, and things are happening all the time. It's just that we live in a very quiet, empty world, because we don't see it.
So what is the, what's your idea of the connection between these spirits and us? Like, is it possible for us, or do they even want a connection with us? And would it benefit us to connect with them, or are we just on different realms?
We've got different experiences that we're living through, but if we connected with them and, I mean, they're working really hard. To maintain the earth in health. And a lot of the things that we do are unhealthy for the planet. And I think we all know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And if they felt that we wanted to work with them, they would just be really happy. And they would try and show us how to heal the earth the way, and work for the earth the way they're doing. Things like gnomes will divert energy. If there's like a low energy place in the earth, they'll divert energy to pick up the energy in that area. And if we were ill and our energy was low, like in our head because we had a sinus infection or something, we'd be quite happy to have more energy put up there so we'd start to heal again.
Mm-hmm.
So they're working all the time. But we were a bit bad because we hunted them at one point. We used to be able to see them. And then they had to put up their own veil. So one of the veils, we didn't start with this veil, but they put it up. And then they got stuck behind it on the other side. Now they're waiting for a bit more from us. And then we can work together to release this veil. But they can't do it alone, and we're not ready to. So I think this will go on a while longer.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel that, like, the little people, that actually there are these tales of little people all over the world in many, many cultures and many indigenous cultures, that, like the leprechauns and I can't remember other names for these spirits. But are they what you're talking about?
Well, I think so, and I think some children are quite good at seeing them. And I think that some people are much better at seeing them than others. But I go back to, who got burned as witches, all the people who could see anything. So then you take that out of the gene pool. And I think you can see them, but it's hard. And I think you have to want to see them and believe there's something to look at. And then you'll just start to see that little flicker of somebody leaving the room, or watch what a cat is looking at. They're looking at something. And sometimes they have that habit of sitting there in front of you and looking over your shoulder.
Right. Which is spooky.
It's a bit spooky, but cats see a lot, And they're just watching things. Dogs see a lot. But I do think that all these little people are around, and they're in houses. But not so many in houses as outside. Houses are a bit like deserts, really.
Uh-huh.
We live in them because we don't want to get wet, basically, or too hot, but why would we not want to live outside otherwise?
Right, right. Well, when I was a child, I read this book, The Borrowers, and since you're actually grew up in America, did you read that book?
No, but I read it to my children.
I love this book, The Borrowers, and for those listeners who don't know what this book is, I can't remember the author, but it's a story of these little people who live in the house, and they borrow things. And the people who live in the house are always going, now where did I put that so-and-so? And then the borrower has taken a thimble and used it as a bathtub or something like that. I mean, it was really wonderful for my imagination. And I was always looking around the house to see if I could see them. So I was kind of an indoor person, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, though. It's hard to explain to people who live outside that we're inside because we don't like to get cold and wet in England or too hot in Arizona.
Right.
But we do. I would say, well.
Well, I woke up I had a dream a couple of weeks ago, and I just, in this dream, it was very strong, and I realized that, there are all these veils around me, and I could see them in my dream. And I realized that it was also my choice just to, push my arms through some of them and open them, to give me a peek into what was beyond the veil. And this is a wonderful veil I hadn't really been conscious of. Although, if you, like, sometimes when I go horseback riding in the wilderness, because you're on a horse, somehow you're more connected to that kind of nature spirit. And so you have more of a feeling about what it was like. Well, this is kind of a tricky thing to say. But what it was like to be an Indian or a Native American, it's like to be able to be one with the earth and to see all these spirits and to actually have relationship with them, like substantial relationship. I that's something that I feel like I would love to nourish in Reiki students.
And I think it's important. I think that because we don't believe in them or we're, it's so lazy in a way to say, oh yeah, fairies, whatever, I can't be bothered with fairies or tree spirits. But you have to do a little work. And and really try and see them and realize that you're not alone and you're not the only people here, you and your farm animals. I'm not saying you personally, but...
No, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, people and their farm animals and their pets, and we're the ones who are here, and this is how we've set our world up. And it's a very tiny part of the world. And that if we were more aware of the others who lived around us, so we're working very hard, we might behave differently ourselves. And there is some things, I know I wrote about it, you know, sometimes I write stuff in books and then later it makes more sense to me. But one of the things was about how the elementals have really studied radioactive nuclear waste because they hated it, but they wanted to know how to deal with it. I mean, we have no idea. We keep burying it or dumping it somewhere. But we would have to work with them in order to deal with it. And that would be good sometime in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, it would be wonderful. It's interesting that you picked that because I was just in Santa Fe and I drove up around Los Alamos because surrounding Los Alamos where the nuclear bomb was created in the beginning in World War II, there's this gorgeous national forest, Bandelier, and some of the most wonderfully spiritually alive places that I know, and that's why I like to go up there. I like going up, and I can feel the Anastasi, the ancient ones who used to live there, and you can see them in their villages in the cliffs, and you can see them walking through the forests, and I mean, that for me is really great, and it's so interesting that it was in this environment that something as interesting for our civilization as the atomic bomb was created. And, yeah.
But it's interesting that you have picked a place and identified it as different, because some places definitely are different. And they're not, they don't just feel different, they have less veil.
Uh-huh.
So they are... I mean, I feel that the Earth is in a very transitory phase, but some places definitely have less veils. And when you go there and you start to see Anasazi walking through the woods, you probably are. And one of the veils that affects us the most is time. And that's an artificial veil. It's an Earth veil to sort of keep us all in order. We use time to order ourselves. But the universe isn't on Earth time, and one day it'll have to go. Because it's not universal.
Right. Well, you know, this is one of the veils that is always challenged instantly when we get into Reiki, huh? This, I tell my students, it's like, you know, you sit and you give someone a Reiki treatment and you look at the clock and one treatment, the hour goes by and you really think in your time self, it was like 10 minutes. And you wonder, like, where did the time go? And then there'll be another treatment where it just seems like an eternity has passed. And it's only been 45 minutes.
Oh,
and you've got 15 more minutes to go, and you're going, can I survive this next 15 minutes? And it's really fascinating. And it happens, comes up all, you know, in many different ways. And I find it fascinating and so interesting, and the more that I am willing to acknowledge the veil, the more I'm on time, which has been really good. It's like when I lived in Santa Fe, we were like on God's time. You know, we were all kind of aging hippies and so on. So we just kind of showed up whenever. We wanted to be there at 5, but if we got there at 10:05, that was fine. But we also could get there at, you know, 5:15, and it would be fine. But now, it isn't my age. It just feels like I'm more aware of the space that I move in so that I allow more time for my body to move in space and arrive at a certain place, you know, in this matrix we call time.
I think so. I think we're still working with time.
But don't you think it's a good learning experience? I mean, I feel like it's this very interesting paradox
Well, I found that I could actually release this, if I went into a meditative space where I was just going to release the future and all its worries and the past and all its mistakes, well, that's half of it. But if you release the present, suddenly it's just you. There is no time, and all the leaves look sharper and clearer. And then I feel like, well, there was a veil there that I've just released. Just for now, while I'm sitting here quietly, I've released that.
Wow.
And that's a bit odd, actually. And then when you get up and walk away, you've got it back on. You've got that veil back on, and the leaves don't look as clear, and you don't feel like there's just you. And actually, it's nice to meet just you in that space.
I agree.
But I don't know if it's because it's a universal life force energy, if it affects time. You know, we're drawing something in from outside, and maybe it just feels like time is not so important.
Maybe so.
I don't know. I haven't thought about it that much.
Well, time is definitely a veil, and it's definitely one that is challenged, or actually is made sheerer, or we walk through it continually in our Reiki practice, and it allows us to have a lot of choice about how seriously we take time, and what the ramifications are of not taking it seriously. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I really got at some point that my being late for some people and in some instances and probably in all instances is that it's a disrespect for the people, and it didn't mean that I was wrong. It just meant that I wasn't willing to look forward enough or to value enough the time that I set for someone to meet me. Mm-hmm. And so once I got that in my body, it was much easier for me to arrange my life so I was, quote, on time.
Yeah, it is about respect.
Yeah, but time in cultures is really interesting. Like if you say to somebody in Germany, you know, I'll meet you at 5, they're always there earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say that in Mexico, you could be hanging out for a half an hour, and that would also be on time. So it's just good to know what the cultural on-time phrase is.
Yeah. I was thinking sometimes that when time is variable in Reiki treatment, that you just experience something that no one can explain, and that's another thing I like about Reiki, is that you run into these things that no one can explain. And that's good. I don't like everything explained.
Well, so what does that mean? That mean that there's, like, mystery and that's a part of who we are, or what is
it? So I think that because I think there's an element that we know, we feel that we know a lot, and that if someone explains to you, I mean, I've had these kind things in Reiki, and there's some people who will not accept that this has happened, or I was mistaken, or didn't look at the clock correctly, but I know it happened. And it just makes, it just takes away the certainty that we have that we're always right. For me. Yeah. But maybe not for other people.
Right. Interesting. I never thought about that. Huh. Well, you've given something that's interesting. Fascinating.
There was one trip. I went to see you in Norfolk. Came back with me and him. And we went 30 miles an hour on the motorway all the way back, hours back. So we got there the same time that it took us to take when we'd driven 60 on the way going to Norfolk. And that was one of those strange Reiki time things. There's no way that should have happened.
Right. I know, and that happens to me, and I just go, what was that about?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the unexplainable.
The unexplainable, which... do you think that that's different than, like, do you have different definitions for unknown, mystery, and the unexplainable? Or are they all the same for you?
Oh, they might all be the same. What an interesting question. I think they might all be the same for me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, for me, the unknown means that it's something that I could know, but I don't know. And the mystery is something that I could never, I'm not ever going to be able to know because it's not able to be known.
Okay. Then I think I'm going to find out a lot of stuff when I'm dead. I feel like I don't know it now, but that won't always be the case. I'll probably die and go, oh, well, that was easy.
Right.
But hopefully that's still decades away, but, you know, I don't feel like it's totally unknowable.
Right. Oh, that in fact, everything in the universe is by some, depending on where you are, knowable.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So that way I won't worry about it. I will just feel like, so I guess being worried about things is part of my personality as well.
Uh-huh.
Well, I can like that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty human.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in all of this, when we speak about time and veils and spirits and so on, I know that you've now written 3 books, and I don't know if that's really quite the accurate way to say it, because you're acting as a kind of channel. Would you call it a channel?
A clairaudient channel. So listening and typing, sort of being the stenographer or the typist. You know.
Uh-huh. So can you just give us some background about how this came about? Is it an extension of your being willing to see the nature spirits and to open veils?
Yes, I think so. I think we're archangelic. And then I think it was my idea, actually. I think I said at some point that I could write a book, and they said, well, whatever makes you happy, basically. So we started writing the first book, and it was like, what I really want, and this is, I really don't want to be in this book. I want people just to hear the voices of the angels that are writing this. That was 3 years ago, and I've now come up to the point, which is what's nice about this interview, is that I can't be without a voice. It's not real to not have my own voice.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just coming to the grips with the fact that I can't walk around going, hey, look, I wrote this good book. Everybody should read them. I have to actually have more emphasis on the alive. I wrote this book.
Uh-huh.
So the clairaudience, it was to get it all down, type, type, type. And then I would have to check that I get it down accurately. And that was always the part where I would have some help, because my daughter's very good at this. And we would go over it together and make sure that it still looked right. So it looked very golden and right when I had the information right, even if I needed to adjust the punctuation and the grammar. And if it looked like it clunked and it was gray, I didn't quite get it right. So we'd have to fix it. And so all the books have been done like that, looking to get the information right, and changing it if it wasn't right. So I feel content that the books are as right as they could be on me hearing and writing down, even though I find typos.
Uh-huh. So when you say right, meaning congruent with what was given to you.
Yes.
And
so I didn't twist it.
Pardon me?
So I didn't twist any nuances.
Uh-huh. That came through your personality.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So what are the books about?
Well, it ended up being a trilogy, but all the 3 books are different. So you could pick up just one if it was interesting. But mostly, started with the first one, which is Planet Earth Today. It was really about the planet, so that people would know the planet and know that we were living with someone that also had a soul. And so we really get to know her in the first book, but it's not the whole book. And then they talk to us about, well, what can you do? How can you change? And what are some easy ways to change? And what do you think is going to happen next? So this was 2009. I think I published that one in 2010. So then on to the downfall of Atlantis. Well, what did Atlantis have to do with anything? But it was just, don't Please don't make these mistakes again. Look, if I show you what happened in Atlantis, you won't go and do any more cloning or any of these things that went so badly wrong for you last time. So, and I did like that book. I actually really like that book a lot. Where it ends up with King Arthur, who's very relevant. For some reason, Arthur is relevant. I don't know why. To this year. And then the last one, 2012, my calendar said it's the end of the old times and the beginning of the new. And that's news for all of us. Because when you get new energy in, it'll be fresh and new, new beginnings, new way to start. You can see some of this just coming to a grinding halt almost now, where it can't go any further.
Uh-huh.
But we'll get fresh energy in. The situation will still be there, but the new energy will help us change it, and we'll strengthen those of us who want to change it. So they made a reference to some industries are a bit like rickety sheds that we've propped up with banknotes, and actually they can't stand up, and they will have to go, but we'll have something else. And it will be something that's based on light. So and they're not telling me any more than that, other than wait and see, wait and see. I said, well, why don't wait and see? I said, you've seen everything, you know, but no. You just have to keep your eye on what you're doing. And keep going ahead, and then next year will be next year. It'll be here. So I'm looking forward to it, but I'm still working through. I've got 6 more months to work through this year, which seems quite hard for me.
Mm-hmm. So what does it feel like? And what did it feel like in the beginning? Did you have an impulse to just sit down at your computer, or did it just happen spontaneously? Or
yeah, well, I used to write it in pen, pen and paper. That was good. And then I just got better and better and better, and then I realized that part of the practice is to do it for longer and longer bits of time. It could get quite tiring, actually, where you've just had enough after an hour. But I can do it for quite a while now. And doing it for an hour is a long time for a channel, to channel well. But you just build up, and it's almost as if your capacity to hold those voices builds because you're practicing. It's a little bit like this is staccato or practice. So if anyone wanted to channel better than they're doing now, it is about practicing. And then that's to hear. And then after a while, you realize that you're seeing things. So then you just practice looking. And
uh-huh.
I think I may have started actually because I could feel the change in energy around me. So it's also practicing feeling things and taking note of what you feel. Because some of the feelings that you get are from the outside.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't have, like, this idea, oh, I want to... You had this idea, oh, I think I am being drawn to write a book. And then when you decided to start it, the archangels came through you, or appeared for you, or I'm just...
They spoke, and I wrote, and I didn't really know where it was going, which is different, because I'm almost typing a finished copy just by typing, while another author might go and do a lot of research in a library.
Right.
And I didn't know who was coming in, they just come in and announce after I finished the section, and that's how I ended up with, like, Archangel of Darkness in that first book. And I think I learned more from him than anyone, because he was very clear about what he had to say, but I didn't like doing it. But I had to learn how to deal with, finally, I had to learn how to deal with the difference between light and dark, which had been a problem for me.
And uh-huh. Can you talk more about that?
Well, light and dark, if you imagine that there's only angels of light, and they took on different roles, so doing the role of darkness doesn't mean that the one who is being dark, like causing misery and upset and pain, that that's their nature. That's just their job. And it took a while to learn that. So it was not to take it personally that they had this job of seeing, could they deliver a lesson to God about how his dark, the dark side of his nature? If God is everything, then he's light and dark. So angels work with God, and they work with bringing him the experiences that we experience. And then we can die and we can have more experiences. And everybody can have experiences and the whole universe can have experiences. And in the end, all of the information will belong to God because it's in his universe. So having found that you can reach God through happiness, you can also reach pain and unhappiness.
Can you say that again? I kind of lost your voice.
Okay. So if you can reach God through happiness, you can also reach him through unhappiness and pain, because there's nowhere else to go. That in the end, we will all return to God. And we're like little tiny bits of God. That's what's interesting. And we just forgot about it. We forgot who we are. And that's okay. That's one of the veils, and that's part of how we want to experience our life. I liked it in the last book because they said, now, if you imagine God is a beach and you're a grain of sand, I thought, well, I get this. This is like me. If I'm a little grain of sand and God is the entire beach, then I am part of the beach. I just don't get the big picture.
Right, right. Well, and I was just to go back, I was just taken by this sentence that you said about where you can come to God in happiness or in suffering, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's, I can immediately have images of what that is. Like, you know, somebody close to you is injured and in pain and suffering, and you go to God and you say, well, you know, I don't really believe in you, but if you help this person, you know, relieve their suffering, then I'll believe, or something like that. And it's, and that's what you mean, that you come to God in suffering?
Yeah, but I think I was thinking more global, that you can have a global situation where the whole planet was unhappy. And
uh-huh.
That didn't mean it was bad. But we attach good and bad to things that we make it a bit more personal that way. But actually, it's not personal. The whole planet can be very unhappy, and that's too bad, really, because they could have been happy, but they didn't make the right choice.
If they didn't what?
If they didn't make the right choices.
Uh-huh.
And so part of what I've written in my book is to try and encourage people to, you know, go for it. Go for being happy. You actually have to work a little bit, and then it should flow along all right. And you can either be happy or you can be unhappy. And sometimes you need to make changes. And maybe you're with the wrong person or in the wrong job. And you're not happy, but it's important to be happy.
Right. Well, you know what? What's interesting for me is that sometimes I make choices. Well, let me back up. I make choices in my life, and I consider them very carefully. And the choice that I thought would make me happy doesn't. And so then I have this double whammy of, you know, this thing not working out as I had planned. So that's one level. And then the other level is, you know, wanting to castigate myself because I chose the wrong door or the wrong choice. And so that means that I'm not really in touch. But I don't think that that's what you're meaning. I think that you're meaning something else.
And that's what... That sounds like a typical angel thing where they're like, yeah, go ahead, take that path, go ahead. They're not going to save us from anything. Then you go out there and you have some bad experience and learn all kinds of things and you don't do that again.
Right.
So it's a valid thing to do. But no, that wasn't what I was meaning. I was meaning there's like, well, in the first book, they would be on, about planets. Planets bad. But it's okay. You know, it's not happy. But they will find God in the end.
Uh-huh.
And I suppose, then, if you look at the planet Earth, because we're supposed to be the planet on a knife edge, you know, where we've got so much sadness in some cases, and quite a bit of happiness in others, that we're showing both at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's different about what's happening here.
Hmm.
So we're pushing boundaries.
What boundaries do you think?
Well, just showing how far one society and one soul can go, being both happy and sad at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And that is different, and it's risky, and we took it on, and we're good people, you know. Really, I think sometimes we look at ourselves and think that we're not, or that the human race is bad, or we've done bad things. But actually, that's not who we are. We're just people that are trying really hard to learn about what it is to be alive. That sounds a bit woolly.
Uh-huh. Well, it brings me to a question. So, what do you think the purpose is of our being in bodies?
Oh, well, that's where all the power is.
Because you really?
No, well, I think so. I think that if you're an angel, you can suggest and guide all you like. But they can't do anything. They can't do things the way we can do it. We can be offered choices, and then we take them. And we act on them. You know, it's really important to be incarnate. Boy, that's where you realize who you really are.
Uh-huh. And then what is the gift that you take back into the spirit world, do you think?
Well, everything that you did. And you get to go back and think about it.
Uh-huh.
And maybe repeat it. And maybe repeat just parts of it. Or maybe swap places. And be the one who maybe had a really hard time. Maybe you gave somebody a really bad time and murdered them. Maybe next time you'd like to go back and find out what it felt like to be murdered.
Uh-huh.
And have all the experiences that you can have.
Oh, interesting.
Well, yeah. But then when you're back up there, you learn about it and you get together with people like your kids and your parents and you just go, well, shall we do this next time? But I think it's interesting, too, with people that might have a chronic disease and they allow someone to really care for them. And maybe that person wasn't very caring in any previous life.
Uh-huh. So this is creating this picture of, again, how our lives have extended from way beyond what we can imagine and will continue way beyond what we can imagine in the future. And that there are all these veils, you know, all these veils. I just love the idea of standing in front of these mirrors, you know, that you see the door behind you and you see the door in front of you, but you see them endlessly, you know, because of the funny mirrors. And just seeing these not being doorways, but being veils. And it's a quite an intriguing vision for me, you know, like a visual.
Yeah, I think, and I don't know if we will ever get rid of all these veils while we're here. But I think some we can.
But is the purpose to get rid of them, or is the purpose just simply to see them and be able to move on through them?
I think that moving on through them is part of our path.
Uh-huh.
If we're looking to be more enlightened all the time, then sometime at some point some of these veils will be less relevant.
Right. Be less relevant. That I can...
Less,
yeah.
But I don't think we'll ever get rid of all of them. Because if we came in and we wanted certain veils in place so that we could experience life in a particular way,
uh-huh.
then we wouldn't really want them all taken away. But we'd want to find out who we were in spite of the veil.
Right. Right. Or be able to include them. Like, I'm just wondering if they serve a purpose. Not just to, like if I think about veils, now I think, well, maybe what I've seen them unconsciously as is kind of boundaries or holding a certain reality in place, using the word reality very loosely. But if I can see them as simply demarcations of reality, then they don't keep me from that reality, and they don't keep me captive either in a certain reality.
No.
They just mark the realities if I can use the word realities so loosely. Okay,
yeah. I think so. But I think that for some people, and you and I are probably people who would be a bit more comfortable if we could get through some of them.
Uh-huh.
If you think about veils, they also have the ability to sort of tangle you up and wrap around you.
Uh-huh.
And it would be nice if some of them were gone, and then you'd feel a bit more clear about where you were.
Uh-huh.
And then you'd look ahead, and there'd still be some veils, but maybe you got rid of a couple of them that were right there, twisted around your ankle. Oh. That would be interesting. I think it would be, I don't know about 100% of the veils, but I do think that some of the closest, most annoying ones could go, and I think it would be a good thing.
Uh-huh. Because it gives us a bigger, a deeper perspective of who we are as human beings and also who everybody else is as a human being, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you think of them as possibly a barrier so that you didn't feel that everyone, I mean, we're all human. We should all have a connection, and yet, you know, we run around killing each other. And maybe if there are fewer veils, that we would be more reluctant to do that.
Yeah, for instance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a lot to think about. Thank you. Well, we're almost to the end of our show, which is just always surprising. This is when this time veil really is so amazing, because sometimes I can't believe I've talked to somebody for an hour, but I have, and we have almost. I'm just wondering if there's some message from your book that you would like to share with us in closing.
Okay. I think one of my favorite things in the last book was just that the future should be wonderful for us. I mean, those of us who are looking forward to it and ready to let go of problems that hold us back in the present.
Mm-hmm.
And the future should be good. We should be enjoying it. I think the planet will change under our feet. I don't think we'll notice necessarily how much it's changing, but the energy should change, and we should enjoy our lives more. We should be able to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, thank you, Candace, for being on our program and giving me lots to think about.
Well, I've enjoyed this a lot. It's been great.
Good. And for those of you who are, for those of you who are interested in reading Candace's books, which I really recommend, you can connect with her through the website that's going to be on the e-card, and find out for yourself what provocative thoughts she has put down on paper through typing for the angels. And I don't say that flippantly. I just say that because it's a matter of fact. So, Candace, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much as well. It's been fun.
Yeah. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.